This is Wendell Young, president of UFCW Local 1776.
We proudly represent nearly 35,000 members who serve their communities at meatpacking and food processing plants, nursing homes, manufacturing plants, grocery stores, our fine wine and good spirit stores, and in the medical cannabis industry, among others. Our members earn fair wages and good benefits. We give workers a voice in their workplace. To learn more about our union, please visit UFCW1776.org.
Talk, listen, and speak to the region's most influential leaders. This is the Legends of Labor Special with J. Doc and Krause.
On this Memorial Day weekend, J. Doc and I and the entire labor community would like to honor all of those men and women who lost their lives while defending our country. Enjoy this special broadcast today of our Legends of Labor. You'll get to meet and learn more about an incredible leader within the union community. And as you make your way throughout Memorial Day weekend, continue to honor those who have served, and especially those who have lost their lives defending our country.
And welcome in, everyone, to another edition of the Labor Show with J. Doc and Krause, as we've reached another moment in time, J. Doc, where we get to stop, put a pause in the weekly show and look back so we understand as to why we're here and why Philadelphia is such an incredible union town, an incredible labor town. And for a guy like me, it is just so educational to learn so much about the history, and that's what we'll do tonight.
Yeah, Joe, and certainly we talk about the labor movement and the difference that has been made by our great labor leaders of today and yesteryear. But what's awesome about it is that difference is made far exceeds the labor movement. You'll see as we talk the difference that were made in countless lives. Of course, that work under a collective bargaining agreement and are fortunate enough to be in a union, but also the standards that were created, the lives that were touched, that far exceed the labor movement. And by the way, that is one of the things I love about the labor movement. We speak for those who can't speak for themselves in a union and those who do not have a collective bargaining agreement. So people are going to learn a lot tonight.
I'll let you get started and let you get underway as we broadcast here on the Labor Show. Just one programming reminder, just so the listening audience has a full handle on our guest list. We'll have multiple guests that will join us throughout the show. And then also Congressman Dwight Evans will join us. State Senator Tina Tartaglione will join us. And Jeff Brown, CEO of ShopRite, will join us as well. So a full guest lineup tonight, J-Doc, should be a great, great show. I'll let you get underway.
So before we bring in Wendell Young IV, who's the president of UFCW 1776 at this time, and we've had Wendell on the program. Welcome, Wendell, to the broadcast.
Thank you.
It's so awesome, and obviously we appreciate the hospitality, being in front of the group of people tonight. I'd like to read some of your father's accomplishments. When we started off, talk about staggering. Let's kind of look at a few things, and you'd almost think you were talking about the President of the United States. At age 16, while a sophomore at Northeast Catholic High School, he began working as a part-time clerk at Acme Markets in the Northeast. After being encouraged by his own father to get involved in the union, Mr. Young's co-workers elected him a shop steward. At age 23 in 1962, Wendell W. Young III successfully ran for union executive office and eventually became the youngest labor leader in Pennsylvania. During his 43-plus years as president, Mr. Young expanded the union to include more than 24,000 members. I don't know how many members we have in the Philadelphia building trades, but it's a lot, okay? You look at, and 24,000 members is almost like an entire building trades. to give people, and Wendell the fourth will probably pass that number now, but it's a staggering amount of numbers. He supported the creation of Super Fresh Markets and a creative employee stock ownership bid that saved Acme Markets and thousands of jobs throughout the region. Under Mr. Young's leadership, Local 1776 won national acclaim for negotiating innovative employee benefits, including comprehensive health care coverage, pension plans, child care benefits, and higher education assistance. Political impact. Beginning with John F. Kennedy's presidential campaign in 1960, Mr. Young was active in the Democratic Party politics throughout Pennsylvania, serving as the leader of Philadelphia's 35th Ward and as a delegate to 8 Democratic National Conventions. In 1972, he headed the U.S. Senator George McGovern's presidential campaign in Philadelphia, winning the city by 80,000 votes. He was a trusted advisor to the governor, to Governor Casey and U.S. Senator Casey. As an early backer of Jimmy Carter, Mr. Young served as the president's on the president's citizens panel of the Panama Canal. Environmental commitment. He pioneered a labor alliance with the environmental movement as a leader of the Citizens Labor Energy Coalition that advocated for green energy and consumer rights. Throughout his life, having recognized the impact of the global economy, Mr. Young was committed to establishing and expanding relationships between the American labor movement, and workers' advocates throughout the world in carrying out his mission. He went to Brazil, Great Britain, Cuba, Bulgaria, Ireland, Russia, Eastern Europe, and Togo, amongst other nations. In 1973, believing that that adversaries should have a dialogue, he was among the first U.S. labor leaders to visit China. In the late 1990s, Mr. Young played an instrumental role in establishing the Pennsylvania Welcoming Center and organized an organization supporting immigrant rights, civil rights, giving back. Throughout his career, Mr. Young built a community alliances to provide a voice for the underprivileged. He was active in both the peace and civil rights movements. Mr. Young was active in fundraising activities for his alma mater, North Catholic High School, and St. Joseph's University, and for St. Patrick's Ceremony, Maynooth, in Kildare, Ireland. He served on the board of the directors of North Catholic Alumni Association and was involved in numerous charitable and civic activities, including the Leukemia and Lymphoma Society, the Peggy Browning Fund, the Variety Club, the Sisters of the Blessed Sacrament, and was a longtime member of the Ancient Order of Hibernians, John Kehoe Division, Gerardsville, PA, just to name a few. Now, this is part of what we read, Joe, and when we were, you know, obviously making our choices. Does that sound like any labor leader you've ever, and we've got great labor leaders, but to me, that resume is so vast, it's incredible, Joe. And so I couldn't be happier and more appreciative than to be here dedicating this Legends of Labor Hall of Fame induction to Wendell Young III. Wendell, what do you think when you hear all those accolades and really the things that he did?
Well, first of all, J. Doc Krause, thanks for putting this together and remembering my dad. What I think about is the fact that obviously I've known my dad since I was born, right? Everything he did involved the union. It was the fabric of his life, and that doesn't mean that we didn't have a family life, but our family life overlapped a lot with that. A family outing was going to a union picnic,
right?
Going to union meetings. A day out with Dad was knocking on doors to get somebody elected, standing at the polls. I think I honestly was handing out leaflets at the polls before I was old enough, before I could talk. I remember doing picket duty when I was about 7 or 8 years old during a Lip Brothers strike. There's a few people in this room might remember that strike in Philadelphia. And it happened during the holidays, so I was off from school. I spent my days going there. So I grew up with this, and Dad, the last you read was very impressive, and I know I'm very biased about that, but it's just the surface. There's so much more. We have a guest here tonight, Bob Walper, in the audience, who spent years trying to document Dad's life to write about it. And it really took a long, long time. And we're not able to finish because of his health, in the end. He was just so multidimensional. And he was ahead of his time. He really was. I mean, I grew up hearing stories, obviously, about things that occurred before my time here at the local. There's some people here tonight that lived through some of those stories. But, when he was president, he was elected president when he was 23. He was elected the year before as business agent, because they were elected back then at age 22. One of the things he thought was really wrong is how the healthcare plan, and this was very common in this country, unfortunately, didn't cover unwed mothers and their children when they gave birth. And he fought to change that. He felt it was really, morally wrong. And not, some of our members didn't take well to that. And so they moved to have him impeached and thrown out of office and run against him. They were the kind of things he was doing when it wasn't popular to do so. Because he would tell all of us all the time that, you can't do what's popular, what's expedient, what's convenient. You have to do what's right. And if you do what's right and you're honest with people about it, they're going to support you because you're going to help improve their lives.
That's interesting, because great labor leadership, there were a lot of factors, in it. And one of those factors is obviously, making decisions that you think are in the best interests of the union and the members. Sometimes they are not popular. And those labor leaders that have the conviction not to be afraid of their members and to do what's right, members can tell when people, care, when their motives are pure. And so having the courage and the strength to make those difficult decisions. You and I have talked, and even when we launched, you were on the first show when we launched, that we were doing the announcement show, and you told a lot of stories on that show that I could relate to like it was yesterday. And so it is a part of the fabric of your father's life that, was absolutely not a job. Okay, it's who he was. And then, so having said that, I absolutely can relate to what you're talking about, because the decisions that he made and growing a union, okay, at the level that he did, those things don't come without growing pains and having the courage to do those things. Was he always a leader? In other words, what was it like living with him?
Oh, some of my brothers are here. You might want to check in with some of them too. But he was tough, German-Irish family, Northeast Philly. Growing up, I knew not only obviously my dad, but my grandfather, my great-grandfather, all four Wendells were alive. The generation that preceded him, they grew up, during the war and the Depression before that. And they knew how tough life was and how you had to fight for everything. And, my father's family, they came out of Centralia, which isn't even there today, and were out of the coal mines. And, they understood you had to get out of there to survive, that the men didn't live long. And so you mentioned about the Ancient Order of Hibernians. Well, that's in a nearby town. They're located up in a nearby town to Centralia. And he traced his roots back to there, and some of his social justice thinking came from growing up in a household where a couple of his aunts were nuns with the Sisters of the Blessed Sacrament, missionaries who taught in poor Indian reservations and urban neighborhoods to Indian and African American children, and that was their dedication, their mission. And one of my aunts was the leader of the order. St. Mother and Catherine Drexel had actually designated her to succeed her as the founder of the order. And she led that order for over 30 years. and then another one of his aunts, Aunt Florence, was with the medical missions. And she was like an amazing surgeon who set up MASH units in Korea and Vietnam and oversaw them for the government, for our military. And these were the people that influenced him. And Father Henry, his uncle, a priest, a Roman Catholic priest. So he was brought up in that environment. Me and my brothers grew up in that environment. So there was an element of service, hard work, and realizing what people really struggled to survive, what it was like for them. And, you know, he was, not exclusive, but unique at the time in that, you know, he had a college education when he, you know, he worked at Acme when he went through college, and he, and they ran for office as a part-time Acme clerk. Labor leaders back then, not a lot of them had college educations. And I think that made a big difference for our members, because when the 70s hit, a decade later, a lot of us, I think I look around the room here, except for maybe one or two of my daughters who are here, everybody was here during the 70s and remembers how tough that was. It was the worst decade in our economy since the Great Depression up until that time. And it was really hard on a lot of the retailers, which was the backbone of our union. And companies like A&P that no one ever thought would be able to hit on hard times, and Food Fair, you know, by the end of the 70s were either out of business or on their way out of business. And then he faced the pressure of privatization of the liquor stores, which was a very important part of our union that he had fought to organize a decade earlier. And so he was able to bring together the right people. He recognized his own limits and the union's limits, so to hire people from the outside. I'm looking at some of the pictures we're running in the back, and I see some of those folks that were hired for each one of those things to help our members land on their feet. And so when he was able to convince A&P to come back as Superfresh, you see some of the folks here in the room today, went through all that with A&P and eventually Superfresh. And when Acme was almost sold off and carved up into pieces in the 90s, he again put those, you know, what he had learned and the skills together to launch an employee stock option plan to buy Acme, right, that the members would buy. And what was really hard for him to explain to people is that the preferred plan wasn't to actually buy the company. It was to keep others from buying it and forcing American to keep it and reinvest in it. But to do that, you had to have the best plan. So at the end of the process, the auction, our members raised $1 billion from direct equity, a company called Freeman Spogli, to buy the company. That was the asking price. American Stores was so ticked off that they took it was the only bid, and they took it off the market instead of selling it, because it was with all the other companies owned around the country. What my father understood is they'll never sell it to us, because that they can't have that. The company couldn't stand that being the solution to companies extracting a lot of concessions or carving up companies and selling them off. So his strategy worked. It wasn't guaranteed it was going to work, but it worked. But he was willing to take those kind of chances, because to do nothing would have left people in really bad shape.
And leadership, obviously, what we were talking about, what in our introduction about how important leadership is in our community. He had that from a very early age, and being a visionary and not being afraid to make those moves. Those are pretty high tech, even today. Going to your membership and sitting down and saying, "Listen, let's buy our own business to maintain our own union members, but to procure our own work." Did he ever talk about, you know, leadership and or did he exude it and being a visionary, even because I know you were under his tutelage. What were his thoughts in those particular areas?
Well, he had a pretty simple view of it. And I know I've said this before. He felt you had to do your homework, right? And in his case, when he started looking at employee ownership, just to use an example, which really paid dividends in both the A&P and Acme, there were mistakes made in the A&P one. And that was in 81, 82. So he learned from that and how to apply it come 90, 91, when we went through it with Acme. But he started looking at this in the 70s. You know, when the economy of the 70s went the way it did, he knew there was going to be collapse, and he saw them. He saw companies like Lipp Brothers leave and some others, and how Food Fair exited very quickly with little or no notice. You know, we have today in this country the WARN Act, where companies have to give notice if they have so many employees or more. You know, the first place in the country it had that was Philadelphia. It's a plant closing bill. David Cohen, Councilman Cohen. You know, Bob Alper in the back of the room helped write that with my dad. And the plant, Philadelphia plant closing law. And we were the first here to have it. It was because of what happened to Food Fair. That company only gave people 2 days' notice, and that's only because my father outed them. They weren't going to give them any notice. They were going to be told when they came to work on Saturday, we're out of business at noon. And they had to come out clean with it on Thursday, and that led to the plant closing law. So all these different experiences helped him evolve over time. And he also knew that he had to not be afraid of what he didn't know. In other words, be willing to hire outside professionals to help. So putting together a team back in the 70s to fight privatization of liquor stores, you know, people from Wharton and other places, to have a plan ready to go if they had to launch an employee buyout of the liquor stores, if there was a bid process, actually became the foundation of what happened to both A&P and Acme. Acme wouldn't be here today if that hadn't happened. You know, the most likely scenario was it would have been sold off in bits and pieces. It wouldn't be here. But that forced, in 1991, American Stores to come back and negotiate with all the unions that, as a result of that effort, that ESOP plan was very well organized at that point. And my father was the chief organizer on that. And what that forced the company to do was renegotiate all the labor contracts to include capital investment. And that's what was missing in the prior decade, capital investment, because the company had gone into a harvesting mode, the owners, the investors. And that whole experience not only prevented Acme from being sold and carved up, but forced them to put what doesn't sound like a lot of money today, but in those days was almost $1 billion in the next 5 years into Acme, and mostly into the greater Philadelphia area. They would not be here today if it weren't for that. He saw that. He could see those things in his mind, and he would figure out strategies that in the moment maybe everyone didn't understand it, but he saw the down the line consequences of either not trying it or trying it. And it didn't all, he wasn't afraid to make mistakes, to get back to your question about, like, you understood you had to try things to gain, and sometimes they're not going to go well, but you have to do it for the right reasons.
J-Doc, hold your thought. This is the Legends of Labor, as we'll get to a commercial break. On the other side of the break, Michelle Kessler will be our first guest here. Back in a moment.
Union members who need help with mental health and substance abuse problems turn to MHC. MHC is a behavioral health care company serving unions for over 40 years. They provide member assistance programs and access to a dedicated provider network. MHC's licensed care managers provide individualized support to members struggling with depression, anxiety, and addiction. They take the guesswork out of behavioral health treatment options. MHC also provides training, education, and crisis response at the worksite. For more information, visit mhconsultants.com.
This program is paid for by Advocacy United. Today's program is pre-recorded.
On this Memorial Day weekend, J-Doc and I and the entire labor community would like to honor all of those men and women who lost their lives while defending our country. Enjoy this special broadcast today of our Legends of Labor. You'll get to meet and learn more about an incredible leader within the union community. And as you make your way throughout Memorial Day weekend, continue to honor those who have served, and especially those who have lost their lives defending our country. It is our Legends of Labor Hall of Fame induction of Wendell W. Young III, J-Doc. What a great show that we've put together tonight. And we just get to tell the story. We just get to live and listen about the story. But tremendous work by you. A lot of good
time that you spent in learning and understanding, and you're doing a great job conveying it to the audience.
Well, I appreciate it, and I'm appreciative that we get to share it with the Delaware Valley.
That's the important thing. I lost my train of thought there for a moment, but that's the important thing. I want the listening audience, who is not the choir,
right,
to understand. Well, I want them to be educated about the power of what Wendell Young, what he stood for.
Absolutely. And education is, it comes in a lot of different areas. Union members, okay? Unionism, union members, union leaders, the general public. So they understand what we're about and why there's a picket line and all those things. And we are paying homage to somebody who is a big part of the making our movement what it is today and where it's going to always be. And so I'm ecstatic to bring onto the program Stuart Davidson. If you would, Wendell, please introduce Stuart.
So Stuart has been a really important person to the members of Local 1776 and to my father, for, I would say, the second half of my dad's career. Dad had great legal representation in Bernie Katz, who's gone now. When I was growing up in the House and also in my early days as a union member, Bernie was the local's counsel. But there came a time we needed to make a change, and Dad found Stuart in his firm, and it's been a great relationship since. I'll also tell you, he also was the officiant at my wedding for Nancy and I, and did an awesome job.
It was covered under the retainer.
Yes. But it just underscores the relationship and the trust we had in Stuart and all the really fine lawyers at Willig and Davidson. And the relationship sustained for a lot of years for good reason, because it's not just that they're good lawyers and have done a great job, but they are fierce about protecting our members' interests. And for that reason, I thought it'd be a good idea to hear from Stuart a little bit.
Thank you.
Well, Stuart, first of all, it's great to have you here. I know the importance of our labor legal representation. Talk about what it means and what type of responsibility that is, and also what the impact that Wendell Young III had on you as you came into the union.
All right. So let me just take a contrary point of view about Wendell W. Young III.
What the heck? We've said way too many good things.
There's been all this positive accolades. He was the worst nightmare that a labor lawyer could have. Because Wendell was always pushing the limits. He was always going up to the line and over the line. And he would frequently remind me that he didn't pay me to tell him what to do, but to get him out of a jam when he got into a jam. And he was like peanut butter and jelly. But in truth, over the years, I've come to the conclusion that Wendell was not of this world, that he was a time traveler, and that he came back in time to change the labor movement and to change the dynamic that was in existence in Pennsylvania and across the country when he was leading the UFCW. And I remember as a young lawyer, before that I was a union organizer, I was a little terrified about what I didn't know. He was never terrified about what he didn't know. He made me learn it. One of the first things that we did together, and you mentioned it earlier, was developing the child care program. He recognized, and by the way, so did the companies, how difficult it was to build schedules with a primarily female workforce, many of them young mothers, who couldn't come to work if their child was sick or if they didn't have someone to take care of their child. And so it was wreaking havoc on the schedules. Wendell understood that. He had a few kids of his own. We actually don't know how many. There's we have estimates. But Wendell realized the problem, and he went to develop with the fourth a a remarkable child care program, daycare program, that allowed union workers to have a discount and sometimes no cost opportunities, good, decent programs for their children, so that the employers were a little not altogether excited about actually funding it, but it helped them, and it kept the stability in the stores, and it helped more and more young women get into the workforce and build the benefits that you were talking about earlier about unwed mothers. You remember that people today don't know what that term means, unwed mothers. They're single moms, but it was, in those days, a stain on people to be called an unwed mother. And Wendell pushed back very hard against any negative thought about people in those situations. And he demanded that we find a way to provide benefits for those people when virtually nobody would provide benefits to them. And that's not where it ended. He wanted to make sure that the union was part of people's lives, not just when they were raising their children and not when their children were in the stores working, but to build a better future for them in the future. So we developed an educational program, a groundbreaking educational program that sent countless young UFCW members and UFCW family members to higher education and to other forms of education, that built a stronger relationship between the union and those members. And that's something that has been lost. Look, when I was growing up outside of Boston, our baseball team was a union-sponsored team. Our bowling league was a union-sponsored bowling league. It was part of the fabric of our families. It was a movement. And Wendell Young's union was a movement. And he led that movement. And that's a very important point. You touched on it earlier. Leadership matters. Some people are afraid of their members. Some people are always counting votes. And other people are leading their members to a better future.
Absolutely.
And he would talk straight to the members. It's Wendell IV's strength as well. You walk in during difficult times when the stores were in trouble, when the economy was tanking, and you had to speak plainly and truthfully and transparently to the members, and he did that. And they respected and revered him and loved him for it. He made me a much better labor lawyer.
And I say that,
Stuart, when he walked into a room, did he own the room?
Oh, yeah. You know, you might not be able to see him, but you knew he was there.
it's funny because a new labor leader, recent labor leader, the guy's father-in-law called me up. Okay, a guy walked into a difficult situation, and I knew the guy's father-in-law growing up, and so he called me and said, you know, what should my son-in-law do? And I mean, I'm not even in that union, but I said, tell you what, call your labor lawyers. If you have any problem trusting anybody, those are the individuals that you can follow. Talk about what it was like having to say no to Wendell Young III.
Couldn't do it.
I don't think I ever said no to Wendell Young III. I begged him. I cajoled him. I kind of suggested different pathways. But I never said no because it was a fruitless endeavor.
But he probably knew your job as much as you. You know, he understood the law. Just wanted to push the envelope.
No, he wrote the law, and that it was Wendell Young law. It's true. I mean, he would push me very hard to find a way to get to the point where he wanted to get to. And so maybe I could convince him that the path that he was on at that particular time was not the right path. But for me to be able to do that, I had to find another path.
And I say that because I can only imagine how many ideas he had. Okay.
No, you can't imagine it.
And you getting that call, I'm sure, because of his accomplishments.
Oh, and those calls came when the ideas popped into his head.
3 a.m.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And it's just amazing when I think about it. Talk about, you know, your fondest memory.
Well, my fondest memory, there's so many of them. I'm not going to tell that one, but I do remember one time he got me arrested. I'm supposed to be the one that's out of jail, getting other people out of jail, but we were at the Dukakis convention. When was that? 84, 88, something like that. And I was there as a member of the platform committee, but I didn't get tickets. I didn't get passes to go on to the floor of the convention. He was a delegate. He was an elected delegate. He had passes. So he took pity on me, this starstruck kid who wanted to be on the floor of the convention. He said, I'll take care of it. I'm going to get you one of our passes. So he came in the next day and he gave me a pass. It was a counterfeit pass. It was a counterfeit pass printed by his printer, Jim Kennedy. And the minute I walked in and showed that pass, I was arrested.
But look, I've heard this story from other people. There were a lot of those passes, but only Stewart got arrested.
There was a premium on arresting lawyers.
Is there a statute of limitations on that?
It doesn't matter because I was arrested, so they had me. It's double jeopardy now.
So before we go, first of all, Stuart, we want to thank you so much. By the way, we could go on.
I'm going to tell you one other
story. Go ahead, hit me.
So and then I'll wrap it up. Like I said, you can't just push me off here. Wendell understood what it was to be human. And Wendell frequently, you know, sometimes he would say things go a little bit far, right? So we were in a health and welfare meeting, and the issue of Viagra comes up. And Viagra was this amazing drug, and it was very new.
Still, by the way, it still is, but go on. Just kidding.
And the employer trustees did not want to cover Viagra. They were against covering Viagra. And Wendell, you know, who was the chairman of the fund, said, we're going to cover Viagra, and we're going to cover it by the number of pills that I use every month. So every member is going to have the ability. And he gave us the number, which itself was very impressive.
It is impressive. I don't know where to go with this, Krause. Where do we go?
But he was always fighting for the members. And that's why today in Pennsylvania and around the country, there are literally thousands, maybe tens of thousands of young workers and older workers who are touched by him. And it's why I think in many respects, and I'm sorry he's not here to see it, that the American labor movement is supported by 71% of Americans. 71% of Americans don't agree on anything in this country except the recognition that the labor movement and that unions are important and meaningful. And the strongest group supporting the labor movement are young workers. And those are the workers he loved the most. He brought them into this union. He gave them opportunities to work through this union. That was the Wendell Young who has a lasting legacy in America through the lives of those thousands and thousands of young workers and people that care about them, and his own offspring are doing remarkable work.
All right, Stewart Davidson. Thank you so much. How do you follow that?
You don't. You go right to the break. Back in a moment.
Union members who need help with mental health and substance abuse problems turn to MHC. MHC is a behavioral health care company serving unions for over 40 years. They provide member assistance programs and access to a dedicated provider network. MHC's licensed care managers provide individualized support to members struggling with depression, anxiety, and addiction. They take the guesswork out of behavioral health treatment options. MHC also provides training, education, and crisis response at the worksite. For more information, visit mhconsultants.com.
Bolton USA is proud to sponsor tonight's Legends of Labor Hall of Fame induction ceremony of the late, great Wendell Young III. His incredible life and legacy continue to inspire us. Bolton USA is a full-service employee benefits, actuarial, investment, and compensation consulting firm with 40 years of experience, providing consulting services to clients in many business and government sectors, building long-term partnerships by delivering impactful solutions to complex issues. To learn more, visit boltonusa.com.
Today's program has been pre-recorded.
And back here on the Legends of Labor Hall of Fame induction of Wendell W. Young III, and a special thanks to Stuart Davidson from Willig Williams and Davidson. Great guest in our last segment. All of our guests tonight have contributed in many, many different ways. And Wendell, you know, my mother used to say to me, take a lesson from the dead and you'll be so much better when you're here. And we're learning so many lessons about the history and the past of your father. It's amazing.
Well, go ahead. I'll go ahead, please.
So our next guest, I first heard his name when I was in the 80s, before I met him, when my parents were selling a house in Northeast Philly, and we needed to get rid of some asbestos. My dad was a little old school. He didn't think there was a lot, so there's no reason I couldn't do it. And he never really had a lot of time to, like, line things up, so he just called me one day and said, call this guy. And it was Pat Iding, who was with the asbestos workers. And Pat was a little nervous. He's like, you know, you really shouldn't be doing this. But if you're going to, and then he proceeded to tell me what to do. So I followed most of his instructions. And then not long after that, you know, I got to know him when there was change occurring at the AFL-CIO. My father told me there was one guy that was right to lead the council. And because he was the kind of person needed to bring everybody together, because prior to Pat's arrival, there was a lot of divisiveness at the Philadelphia Council. And Dad was right about that. And you know, he was one of the ones that, you know, really argued for Pat to be the guy. And when Pat came in, he did a lot to put that divisiveness behind us. He was good at forging compromise and bringing people together, and he's done an outstanding job. And it's really been a pleasure working with him all these years, because Philadelphia Council is such an important council, the AFL-CIO here in Philadelphia, considering it's the most densely populated area and center of the political get-out-the-vote in Pennsylvania. And so, Pat, I'm glad you came tonight. My dad had a lot of respect for you, and that's why he really felt you were the right guy for it.
Thank you, Wendell, and the respect, I have to assure you, is mutual. But I think it's an unfair situation to come in after Stuart Davis and Joe using Viagra all the times. I mean,
right,
God,
right.
What a lead-in. It's got to go downhill from there.
Did I say that? Go ahead.
But, listen, there's a tremendous amount of things that have been said about Wendell III. And not as young as Wendell, but I was fortunate enough, or unfortunate enough, I don't know how you place that, to start out very young in a position of leadership that I always thought that I was going to be one of those company people. And all of a sudden, similar to Wendell, there was something going on that I didn't think was right. And I think that's what Wendell was always about, if it wasn't right. And, you know, coming up through the time that I did, I was with the building trades. And Wendell was criticized a lot because thinking, if you will, back in those times, the at least me, the mid to late 70s and the 80s, the building trades were, you know, they were a name. Good, bad, or ugly, they were a name. And Wendell was just steady. He was always doing something for somebody. I mean, what's unique is he had the Comey Institute at St. Joe's. And all the people who criticized him, those leaders were people who went to St. Joe's to find out how to be leaders. And this was Wendell who set that up. And he, you know, he had that kind of history that was, in our world, dull, but his is steady. And it, steady to where he cared about working people in a way that the rest of the world was a little different politically. He fought that kind of thing upstream. And I don't want to rely on his book, because what I knew about him at, I think it was Carfare, where he, you know, for how many months or maybe years, he fought this foreign company coming over here, tearing down conditions for working people. Very unique. He created the first picket line coming from the building trades that I saw, where he had mannequins or something for filling in for
people in the room here that walked that picket line.
This is what I knew about him. And I knew he ran for Congress against Tom McGran, a guy named Eddie Goldsmith. Being a young guy with John McCullough still around and all, there was a lot of things happening. But in Wendell's side, I didn't know too much. I just knew of him. And in that whole world, he's the only person I knew that had anything to do with an Acme or, ShopRite. With no ShopRites back then, but the other stores. But then in 2005, unfortunately for the labor movement, they had a convention where the labor movement split. And I have to tell you, and this is a little bit emotional, Wendell Young got up on the floor with how many thousands of people were there at that convention and tried to impress on those leaders how important it was to working people for them to stay together and not let this happen. And I think for months after that, Wendell's speech was recognized because it was so emotional and so real. It spoke of the man he was. It spoke of the man he lived. And, fast forward, he was one of the entourage that came to Pat Iding about taking over this AFL-CIO thing, that whatever was going on there. And unfortunately, it was a mess. But the same people who kind of criticized Wendell because he was so social compared to the building trades and some of the other politicians in the city of Philadelphia admired him. I remember Pat Gillespie speaking of him in almost an emotional fashion when Wendell got sick. This is one of the people that I grew up with that thought Wendell was somebody else. Like, he had two heads somewhere because he didn't think like us. He didn't think like that. But I have another story that I think really tells the man. There was a guy named Sal, young guy.
Sal Barbino.
He got hold of the leadership of the longshoremen. And unfortunately, he got a disease of some sort that I don't even remember what it was. It happened so soon and so quick. But Wendell Young was sitting in the lobby of the hospital when I saw him to visit him, waiting for a room. I guess it was Jefferson. I'm not sure.
It was Jefferson, yeah.
Waiting for a room. And in comes Sal, sick as he was. And a room came available for Wendell. Wendell said, give it to Sal. That's the guy we're talking about. So when you talk about labor leaders and the tough guys, and, I mentioned John McCull, I mentioned some other people. I was fortunate enough to transcend a lot of great leaders who were tough leaders. But when you think of Wendell and his strong leadership and what he's done, and just look at who he organized. Look who he made a family life better because of whether it was unwed mothers or whether it was somebody just starting out while he was trying to go to school. That's a whole other area that people, I don't think they often think about it. I mean, we're sitting at the table now that some people don't know that the ShopRite's union. There's a lot of things that happen in a world of the labor movement that was criticized, was pushed back on, and the guy never stopped. Now, I don't have the funny stories to say about him, although I do have a couple of a friend of his by the name of Jim Johnson that I can't talk about. But it's just really, really important that he's one of the folks, one of the first people that are being recognized on this show. Because I think that there's not enough told about him. And the personal side that I had the great experience with the last few years of his life, being with me down at the AFL-CIO, not only as a labor leader, but guided me in a lot of ways just by conversation, because he lived it. And it wasn't something he was talking about somebody else did. It was something he did. So it's my pleasure to be here tonight. I'm honored to be here tonight. And thank you for asking me.
So I want to share a little bit more about Sal's story. So Dad did get a room soon after. They were there at the same time. Sal had a really tough time ahead of him health-wise. And while Sal liked to, before it was legal to do so, this was quite a while ago, liked to smoke pot in his hospital room. And, of course, to get Sal that room, Dad had to make a few calls, which led him to the head of the hospital. And so they end up calling Dad and saying, listen, we got a problem. You need to talk to your friend. Now, they're both in the same hospital. So Dad ends up schlepping on over to Sal's room to say, Sal, you can't smoke dope in the hospital, right? They're not going to go for that. They're not going to let you stay here if you keep doing that. And, of course, Sal needed some relief Well, Dad, you know, was gone in a few days. Not gone like dead. I mean, gone like he got discharged. And he calls me up and he says, "You got to take me out of the hospital." I said, "What's the matter?" He goes, "Well, Sal is no longer smoking in his room. He's going with the what's that thing that you have your IV hooked up to on the wheels in his robe with no back to it out to the street corner and smoking dope out on the street corner now." And so Dad insisted I drive him down there so he could go talk to Sal that, like, you can't do this. So Sal's like, "What, you want me to get dressed? What are they going to do, arrest me? I'm not going to be here that long." And Sal, you know, didn't, you know, he succumbed to his illness. But my dad really hit it off with Sal while they were there together and stayed in touch but also tried to find a way for Sal to get some relief without getting busted.
And Wendell, I think it should be a known fact that what your dad had wasn't a mild cold.
No,
I mean,
not
he
at
was
all.
He yeah, was yeah. in some really bad time in his life, yeah. And you know, he just let it all hang out, and not like Sal. But in a way that's...
Well, not there.
That is, but he's quite a guy. I mean, really. I mean, I don't want to, you know, go back to where I started, but knowing what I knew about him then, which was very little except what I heard, and then getting to know the man, starting in 2005 at his speech, and then the real part of that I came close with, and... I think you know, because I made a phone call to you. I want to keep him around. So.
Thank you.
Pat Eiding, president of the AFL-CIO, finishing us up here tonight on the Legends of Labor Hall of Fame induction of Wendell W. Young, the third. Wendell, I want to come back to you. 2 minutes left until we wrap up this very special broadcast, and you get all 2 minutes, sir.
Well, I want to thank the station and J-Doc and Krause and everyone for pulling this together. It's a nice way to remember Dad, but it's also nice to see everybody that came tonight. You know, I look around the room. Some folks I worked with at Acme were here tonight. Some of the staff I worked with in my first summer full-time on the job as a green organizer. Lou Ferrante's here, who I got assigned to work with, is my first mentor on the job. And you know, I see Stan Katus here. We ran into each other at the Fetterman rally with his whole family, all of whom worked for Acme, all five of them, I think it was, or six all together. We had a nice time reminiscing and so many others here tonight. So it's nice to be able to spend some time with you before we got started the show. But for my dad, you know, he loved the union. He loved the members. It wasn't always easy. I mean, I was at meetings where things got rough. People were angry because they didn't like what was going on. And he had to deliver some tough messages sometimes and tell them things they didn't want to hear. But, you know, he always said, you got to be honest, you got to be transparent, and you can't not tell them what they need to hear. And he really worked hard. I would see it growing up in the house to try and figure out solutions that everyone had told him there are no solutions. I once wrote something about him where, you know, in every aspect of his life, lines were drawn in front of him. People would draw lines, say, you can't, you know, pass this line on any number of issues. Companies, you know, healthcare providers and negotiating benefits, everybody. He always found a way to get past that line. He knew people's expectations were not always going to be able to be met, but he felt, you know, that if he gave it all he got, and worked hard and was honest with them, that they would support him. And he also, you know, we talked about some of the things earlier, you know, the unwed mothers, but also his efforts against the war in Vietnam. You know, that was not popular with a lot of members that he was out fighting that, even though some of them were losing their sons to it. And remember what Stuart said about the members. Well, our members, many of them started out at 15, 17, 19 years old, like I did, like people in this room did, and I'm sitting here with right now, and they were the young people that were going somewhere else, weren't getting a start in life, and many of them not coming home. And, you know, the civil rights movement was really important to him. You know, I know he was on the forefront of what we think of civil rights movement as black, white, but he really saw it multidimensional. He used to always use the term black, white, and galvanized. And he really, it wasn't just about color, culture, what countries you came from, but also your gender identification. That term wasn't used back then, but, you know, he worked really hard at that. I wish he could have lived to see how things have evolved here in this country, because he really pushed for those issues. And to see that people can now be who they are and love who they want, I think would have been really nice if he had lived to see that, because that's the kind of stuff he fought for people to have rights, to have benefits, to be able to, have a decent quality of life. Some of the things he talked about weren't in size and scope necessarily the biggest accomplishments, but he knew to the people it was. For example, he would often talk about his trip to bankruptcy court to protect the Corvette's pensions. And, you know, once that company went out of business. And these weren't the biggest pensions in the world. But to see the way he went after that to protect them, you would have thought they were million-dollar-a-year pensions. And he would say, you know, when it comes time for them to collect, that's going to make a difference in their life, even though it may not look like a big deal. And there were other leaders that didn't pursue it like he did. And for all of us that worked with him and for him, many of them were here tonight, I know they know what I'm talking about, because we often were given challenges by Dad. I refer to him as Dad, but and a lot of times, let's face it, you know, we would sit there and go, oh, shit, that, like, how are we going to do that? And he really challenged us to figure out how to run the extra miles, put in the extra time. He had an amazing amount of creativity. And as Stuart said, he wasn't afraid of what he didn't know. He would then reach out and hire people that would help fill in those blanks. It was always make the effort. Don't just roll with it. And we all learned a lot from him. And I'm really glad I had a chance to work with him all these years, because with how busy he was, I might not have known him so well. And I'm really glad that I did get to know him.
Great stuff. Well done. Legends of Labor Hall of Fame induction of Wendell W. Young III, our very special broadcast as we say goodbye to everybody who came out for the live event. J-Doc, we will do an actual presentation of the plaque right out in front. We thank everyone for being a part of the Legends of Labor Hall of Fame induction of Wendell W. Young III. See you next time, everybody.
This program is paid for by Advocacy United. All opinions or statements expressed on this program are solely those of Advocacy United or its guests and do not reflect the views of WPHT or Odyssey. Today's program is pre-recorded.